What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. I'm your host, Jake Painting. As usual, we are brought to you by the Canis Hoopers Podcast Network and the SB Nation Podcast Network. Today, we're pretty much bang on 1 month out from the draft. So we're going to continue our draft stuff. I know it's been a long haul trying to get through all this stuff and trying to stretch out the content all the way until the draft, but We're back with Tyler Metcalf. He's hashtag Basketball's draft contributor. He's now with Canis Hoopers as well, doing a lot of good stuff over there. What's going on, Tyler?
Not much, Jake. Happy to be back on with you. Excited to talk about power forwards today. And, you know, finally we have something to look forward to as Timberwolves fans, as we're about a month out here from the draft.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a long road with no basketball, and now that the playoffs are over as well, it's made it even worse. Like, there's not much going on at the moment, but we're going to try and power through some draft stuff, and hopefully this next month will fly pretty quickly past, and we'll get to see who the Timberwolves end up on draft night. We know they have three picks, so it's going to be an entertaining night. As you said, today we'll do power forwards. We've obviously gone through the other three positions, point guard, shooting guard, small forwards, up to now. If you haven't listened to those, you can go back and listen to those whenever. They're not really going to clash, so you can kind of work through them at your own pace. But if you have been listening to them, you know that Tyler is the number one Denny FDS supporter.
Yes, sir.
He's been on the Denny bandwagon for a long time. And so we'll start with Denny. He's number one on both of our boards, or the number one power forward on both of our boards. But for Tyler, he is the number one prospect on his board overall. So I'll let you take the mic, Tyler. Tell us about Denny. Tell us what you like, what you don't, and then I'll fire some questions at you after that.
Yes, and those who have been following anything I've been writing over the last year know how much I'm intrigued and excited by Denny Avdija. For those of you who are new to me, you're about to learn. This guy's been number one on my board for almost a full year now. I just love everything he does. And I don't think he has the highest ceiling in this draft, but I think he has one of the higher floors and with the very high ceiling. You know, he doesn't have that one elite skill like LaMelo Ball's playmaking or something like that, but he just does everything at a really high level and constantly contributes to winning basketball. I know a lot of people rip on his shot that, oh, he can't shoot. And when you look at his mechanics, they look good. He's just kind of missing. He had that awesome burst once they came back out of their kind of break from play, and then kind of came back down to normal. But his free throw percentage after the break stayed up at right around 70, I think low 70%. And he's definitely working on it. He's definitely improving on it. I don't expect him to be a Davis Bertans or Danilo Gallinari, but I think he will be league average, which opens up a world of possibilities for him on offense, because right, as long as defenses have to just at least respect it, it opens up what he's actually good at, which is creating off the dribble or attacking the rim or finishing in transition. So for the Wolves, I love his fit next to Russell and Towns, where he can be that secondary or tertiary playmaker on the move and cutting off of Towns' post-ups, or, you know, cutting in off out of that pick and roll that they run. So everything he does, I think, fits perfectly with the Wolves. I'm really intrigued and encouraged by the improvements we've seen out of him. You know, and defense, I think he's a pretty good defender. He's not going to be an all-NBA defender, but when you look at where he was defensively 2 years ago, you know, he would rival Trae Young for how bad they are. And now, you know, his weak side rotations are pretty good. He's moving his feet better on the perimeter. And he said in interviews that his coaches just flat out told him, don't worry about defense. You know, you're here to score, you're here to lead. Don't worry about defense. He wasn't taught how to play defense until he was like 16 or 17 years old. So the improvements that he's made on that end really suggest to me that he just has so much more room to grow, and that he's going to be, you know, a good defender. Not all NBA, few are, obviously, But as far as, you know, weak side help team defenders go, I think he'll be very good.
Yeah, and that was the first thing I kind of wanted to ask you about him, because I think there's obviously varying reports, kind of varying opinions on his defense, and I kind of side with you a bit more on that. I think that as a help defender and as a rotation defender, he's a really high IQ guy. I think that, like, his IQ and his knowledge of the game and his kind of instincts of the game shine through everywhere throughout his whole game. He's just one of them guys who get it. Like, he gets where to be. He gets, you know, he might have some physical limitations and stuff, but right. He knows where to be and when to be there. So that's kind of the first thing I wanted to ask was, like, do you think he'll be able to guard the bigger threes or the bigger wings in the NBA? Obviously, we're considering him as a power forward, but do you think he'll be able to guard down a position, or do you think he's mainly going to be able to help a defense as a rotation defender, as a weak side kind of shot blocker and someone who can get into position and wall up?
I think his immediate impact would be as a weak side help defender. And he does an incredible job of staying vertical. And like you said, his basketball IQ is really high, and so is his work rate and his work ethic. So, you know, I expect these, you know, incremental improvements we've seen just continue, especially once he's in the NBA with NBA coaching, and that is his life, you know, with the best coaching in the world. So from the start, I expect him to struggle as an on-ball defender against when he gets switched on to, like, quicker guards. You know, most rookies do. Whereas, you know, Isaac Okoro, I have full confidence that he can switch on to anybody at any time and be incredible. But Okoro's, you know, leagues above everyone in this draft. If Dia will struggle on ball because of his physical limitations, you know, he needs to improve that lateral quickness and just kind of staying in his stance. But again, I just go back a year and a half ago and look at his international play. And, you know, the jump he's made from then is really impressive. And even back then, we were seeing flashes of his weak side rotation. And I've also heard concerns that he doesn't have the length to be a rim protector. It's like, okay, well, you don't have to block every shot to protect the rim. Just making that rotation on time and getting there before the opponent and walling up and staying vertical, you know, that throws off shots, you know, more often than chasing blocks does.
Yeah, so, you don't have to be right. a shot blocker to be a good right. a good help defender. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think he'll get to the rim well, like you said, and he'll wall up. But I also think that he's pretty promising just in terms of just making rotations around the perimeter. Like, as long as it's not kind of isolation, pick and roll defense where he has to guard a ball handler who's a lot quicker than him and who can really expose his lateral quickness, then I'm pretty confident that he'll do the right thing defensively. Like, he'll help the helper and you know, he'll make the read to the rim. He'll do all that stuff. So, yeah, I'm pretty confident in his defense, to be honest.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I just, when you talk about, you know, can he defend in isolation? You know, just looking at the other kind of guys in my top 10, the only one I'd be confident in defending isolation is Okoro. You know, the rest are either too big, they lack the fundamentals, they're inconsistent, they don't try, etc., etc. So, I mean, with Denny, I have zero worries about his effort out there. I have zero worries about his basketball IQ. And I think, you know, the things
that just his work ethic to get better as well. Like, he's a tireless worker from all reports, you know, from every source that I've read or heard from about Denny. It's that he works really hard.
And I just fully expect him to improve across the board on that. And, like, a lot of the defensive, or, you know, some of the defensive flaws are, you know, just fundamental things that are things you can improve on, like, you know, your closeouts and, you know, pick and roll navigation and stuff like that, which will all come with coaching and, you know, just reps.
So the other thing is, obviously, I'd be remiss to have you kind of spiel about Denny and not question the shooting? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
You touched on it, obviously, and it is the big question mark for him. What I want to know is, if the shooting doesn't improve, do you think that lowers his ceiling significantly if he kind of never is able to shoot, say, above 33%, or he's never able to create his own shot off the dribble, kind of like how he is now? Like, would you still have him at the top of your class, knowing, you know, in 5 years that he never got to another level with his shooting?
I probably not. And if we saw absolutely zero improvement out of his shot, I'd have to lower him just because he'd just be a flat out bad shooter. You know,
and that's a hard question, because obviously you project growth
right
for every player. Like, it's you can't just kind of have your opinion set in stone on what they are right now. But how much is that a really big, I guess, swing that you're taking, that he's going to at least get to league average?
Yes, yeah, so based on his mechanics, you know, there isn't anything inherently wrong with his shooting form anymore. I mean, before their break, you know, his mechanics were solid, but he would, you know, either be too hunched over or he'd fall out of his shot too early. You know, it's just little things where he wasn't piecing it all together. And then after the break, it looked smooth. It looked consistent. I know Dane Moore touched on this a lot in his podcast, and we have very different views on Denny. But, you know, Dane puts the work in and I respect his views. And I just find it hard to imagine someone with his shooting form not at least being league average. And the really encouraging part, I know his free throw percentage has been bad for majority of his, or for like the last two seasons, but you know, after the break he was shooting in the 70%. So, and you know, those first 5, 6, 7 games after their break, he was shooting like over 40% from three. I know it's a small sample, but it shows me that he's working on stuff. He's actually implementing it into the games, and it's not just all empty gym footage. It's stuff he's working on there and then actually able to translate to the game. And I just find it hard to imagine him, you know, not being at least mid 30 to high 30% three-point shooter. Again, not going to be lights out. He's not winning any three-point contests. But I expect him to at least have, you know, he'll be able to force defenses to respect his outside shot. And if he doesn't, you know, this will be probably a big miss for me, as he'll just kind of end up being a tertiary playmaker on the move who's just kind of a rotation role player.
Yeah, and that's the risk you take, I guess, especially in this class. Like, there's no clear-cut guy to have number one, so you really believe that you can project someone to be, you know, to go to another level with one of their certain skills, then it's worth having the number one, I think. And I think one thing we kind of glossed over a little bit in general is the playmaking, which obviously is the thing that has everyone kind of quite excited, just because he's obviously 6'9", he's 215 pounds, like he's a big dude, and he can really get going in the open court, like especially off a rebound, like in a rip and run situation, and he's just a great transition passer. Good in the half court as well. I'm not sure he's the guy. He's not going to be a lead ball handler, which I think a lot of people kind of hype him out to be, especially with the rise of Luka Doncic and stuff like that. But I think, yeah, like you said, as a secondary tertiary playmaker, he could be really good. And he's a genuinely great passer for a 6'9" guy. Like I said, not a transcendent playmaker, but someone who can really pass at that size. And that's a really valuable skill, especially in today's NBA, especially if he's going to play as a four. And with a team like Minnesota or another team that he falls with that kind of already has some foundation pieces offensively, where he can kind of be a periphery guy who sets up teammates and who cuts to the ring. He's a really good cutter. He's just a really smart mover off the ball. How much do you believe that he can kind of handle as a pick and roll player? Like, do you think he can handle, you know, 10, 15, 20 pick and rolls a game? Like, is that the kind of thing you expect from him immediately?
Immediately, probably not. Eventually, yes. We definitely saw flashes of it this season, but his team really didn't ask him to do much of it. He was a little sloppy when put under like heavy pressure.
And they're a really good team. Maccabi were a really good team. Like, for a, you know, international team, like, they're one of the best international teams in the world.
Yeah,
and they have some really big, you know, Quincy Acey, Amari Stoudemire, like, guys,
their lead guard, Scotty Wilbekin, you know, easily could have won an MVP. So they weren't taking it out of his hands a whole lot.
Yeah, so Denny, it's not like in a lot of other international situations with, like, say, LaMelo Ball or RJ Hampton even kind of got similar. I guess Hampton kind of got similar treatment more to Denny, but like in a Ball situation or a Poku situation where these guys were just allowed to be the stars of the team and kind of do what they wanted. Like, Evdia was really in a rotation that he wasn't the star in, and that he wasn't allowed to just go and showcase his ability to be a lottery pick. Like, he had to play within a team construct, and I think that's a plus, I believe, because it really means he's disciplined already and knows how to play in a team and not as a superstar, you know, kind of guy who's going to get the ball whenever he wants and do whatever he wants, and right. That's what's going to happen when he does get to the NBA.
Yeah, and I don't expect him to be, you know, that lead ball handler playmaker like Luka, and no one's like Luka. Eventually, I think he'll be more comfortable in the pick and roll once he improves that ball handling, and with his work rate and work ethic, you know, I keep going back to those, and I'm betting a lot on Denny's intangibles, but I expect him to improve to that point immediately. Yeah. You know, immediately, I think he's just a lot better playmaker when he's, you know, on the move, whether he's running off screens and then slashing to the middle and dumping it off to the dunker spot or kicking it out to three or running in transition. I mean, his straight line speed is really impressive and, you know, really surprising when you first see it. You're like, oh, damn, he can move and he's strong. So, and he can get to the rim. Once he gets in the paint, you know, he's pretty effective finishing around the rim, which will force defenses to collapse on him, where he can, you know, drop it off to Towns or kick it out to Beasley or Russell or, you know. So early, that's kind of the playmaking role I see him in, where he's running off screens and finding those open spaces and creating off the dribble, or, you know, setting up on the wing in isolation and then creating out of the drive there. Eventually as his game matures and as he matures, I fully expect him to be able to run the pick and roll. Again, not like Luka, but competently or effectively.
Yeah, and if you are, which I guess, you know, most people are listening to this, if you're looking at Denny through a Timberwolves lens, that's the kind of player that they do need. Like, a guy who can handle the ball, but not more in a secondary role. Like, a guy who can run second side pick and rolls with Towns and D'Angelo Russell on the court, who gives Russell a little bit of time to work off the ball. Gives Towns time to work off the ball, where he's obviously so good and is really maximized as a guy who can spot up for open shots. I think Denny as a four is definitely the kind of player who would make sense there. I can't get to number one on him just because I'm higher on other guys, but I definitely see the appeal with Denny. He's nine on my board, and I could probably move him anywhere from like 6 to 10. Like, he's kind of in that range for me. And which I think is probably similar to consensus. And if Minnesota trade down, or even if they were to take a swing on Denny at one, like, I don't think I'd be appalled by that. Like, it's such a, you know, mismatched class that anything goes. And I think Denny will be a really good player. And I think he's definitely a player who's going to be situation dependent. I think. He's prone to bouts of losing a little bit of confidence in himself when he's not kind of going really well, and I wouldn't want that to happen just because he's drafted to a team that uses him in the wrong way and kind of tries to round peg into a square hole kind of situation. Square peg into a round hole probably makes more sense. But yeah, like, I think with Minnesota, he would be a good fit. And in general, I'm excited to see where he goes and how his career unfolds.
Be fascinating.
All right, so we're moving on to number two. I think Danny might have taken the trophy for most time spent on a prospect. Like, we're 20 minutes in, so.
I'm sorry, I can't help myself.
I know, that's all. I've let you off, like, wind you up and let you off there. So, who's your second guy? Who's your second power forward?
Okay, so my second guy, I have him 10th overall on my board right now. Despite being, almost unanimous player of the year in college, he's become NBA Draft Twitter's least favorite player in the world, and that's going to be Obi Toppin. The concerns with him are pretty obvious and glaring. I mean, he's atrocious defensively. I mean, he can't get down in his stance. He's, slow laterally. But I struggle to see a way where his offense doesn't translate. When you look at synergy, his offensive numbers are ridiculous. He's in the 99th percentile overall scoring, 86th posting up, 95th in transition, 96th cutting, 98th in spot up, 100% on offensive rebounds, 90th on jumpers, 98th percentile around the basket, 80th percentile shooting off the catch. So I think he's going to be really situational dependent. I would love for him to somehow fall to Portland. I don't think he'll fall that far. But who knows?
Yeah. From everything I've read, the NBA GMs are a lot higher on him than Twitter GMs.
Yeah, and if it's up to NBA Twitter, I think he might go undrafted. he's an awesome athlete, and he's, maybe he can kind of develop into like that weak side shot blocker, because he's athletic enough to do so. But God, his defense is bad. So yeah. I get the people that are turned off by him, but I just think his offensive capabilities are too impressive to fully pass up or completely disregard him as a prospect.
Yeah, well, I guess I am one of the people that are, like, I am definitely low on him. He's 17 on my board, so
yeah,
it's fairly low, I think, especially compared to what his draft slot will end up being, because I think he goes top 10. Like, I'm almost positive someone will take him in the top 10. Obviously, like you said, the athleticism is pretty jaw-dropping at times. Like, we've all seen the open court through the legs dunks and stuff, which kind of encaptures what he can do running in a straight line and getting up off the floor in the open court. The shooting as well is something that gets spoken about a lot, but the two things that stand out to me on the good side of Obi is, one, he's passing out of the short roll. That was really impressive, and obviously it's something that has been spoken about more and more over the last few years, just in NBA circles, of just how important short roll passing is, especially for a big man, and especially in the 3-point shooting era that we're in. Like, you need guys who can roll in the pick and roll and make quick decisions to corner shooters or to shooters in the slot, and I think Obi will be able to do that from day one. Obviously, he's 22, so he's very NBA ready. He's physically, beastly as a physical presence. So he's 6'9", 220 pounds, 7'2" wingspan as well, which is bigger than I thought, actually. Like, I'd never actually looked that up, but like, that's huge wingspan for a guy who's 6'9". Like, and then the other thing that stood out to me that is more obvious, but is just his finishing around the rim on non dunks. Like, his the ability to contort his way around people and to kind of keep his body under control going for layups, especially out of pick and rolls and just in general, like in cut on cuts and stuff. He's an awesome finisher around the rim. Like, I'm not sure how much of that translates to the next level, just because at 6'9", it does get a little bit harder in the NBA when you are playing probably at least one you know, 6'11", 7-footer a game who's going to be at the rim and obviously some of the best rim protectors on the planet. But I think he remains a pretty good finisher. And those two things will give him a role, you know, at the least, without even, in, you know, factoring in his three-point shooting and his obviously awe-inspiring athleticism above the rim. I just think the short roll passing and the finishing at the rim with layups and with body control are really important. And like you said, he's a synergy superstar, which is to take a phrase from Jack Borman. the bad things, like you said, it's you don't need to spend an eternity on Obi Toppin's defense that's been analyzed to the T.
So bad.
But it is bad. Like, he might be the worst pick and roll defender in the league next season from day dot. Like, it's kind of like, as Timberwolves fans, we're all used to watching Karl-Anthony Towns struggle on the pick and roll. Like, imagine that, but like twice as stiff in the body and smaller. So, like, that obviously takes away a little bit more at the rim. Like, in drop coverage, he's just atrocious. Like, drop coverage is kind of meant to like be designed for bigs to do less and to have less things to think about and more just focus on protecting the rim. And he just seems to be stuck in concrete, you know, in drop coverage.
Right.
And his hands are always kind of just up and doing nothing. Like, he's not in a stance or, I don't know. It's hard to watch. And I think he's going to be very bad next season. I think he'll be very bad for his career. But like you said, if there's any kind of hope, it's that he can become like a weak side shot blocker and that maybe salvages some of the pick and roll and isolation defense. But even then, yeah, you're kind of you're pushing the shit up a hill a little bit there. So. The problem I have with Toppin is I don't think his offense is good enough to negate his defense like a Karl-Anthony Towns.
Yeah,
like Karl-Anthony Towns can be an offensive engine. So even with some of the worst big man defense in the league, he's still going to give you, you know, 26 and 13 a night and one of the best three-point shooting big men of all time. So I'm not sure Toppin can carry that load. I think he's maybe at best like a secondary scorer on a good team. So to have someone who's really not kind of making up for his defensive deficiencies with his crazy offensive talent, that's what worries me. That's what pushes him out of the lottery for me, just because I think he's probably going to have to just be a role player, really, a guy who can come in and score, but I don't think he can really build a team around a guy who can't defend and isn't going to be a 25-point scorer at night.
Yeah, and that's the tough thing with him now, too, is because, like, at the NBA, if he's not paired with, you know, a defensive stalwart of a center, you know, their defense is just going to be atrocious. But then the problem with that is that when he is paired with that center, you know, the vast majority of those big men are reliant on being around the rim on offense, and Obi is at his best on offense probably as that screener where he can slip or roll to the rim or, you know, pop out for a three. And if, you know, he's the main screener and then you have a 7-footer just sitting under the basket, I mean, your spacing's gone all to hell.
Yeah.
I definitely did get the concerns. He's just so much fun. The issue,
he is fun. Like, he gets so spoken fun. About like he's someone who's just like a chore to watch, but not. Like, he's a really fun player to watch, but he reeks of one of them guys who's not going to translate.
Yeah, you know, it's just like, is this just going to be Derek Williams all over again? I hope he's not, because that didn't work out well. But and, you know, as far as the Wolves go, I don't want them to touch him with a 10-foot pole. You know, if he's there at 33, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But 1 or 17, their offense, you know, they'll put up 150 a game, but they'll give up 250. So,
yeah. All right, we'll move on from Obi. He was 5 on my list, so there's I've got a lot of guys in that kind of 10 to 17 range, power forwards. One of those guys who I think might be three on your list is, yep. is Patrick Williams.
Yes, sir.
He's 6'8", 225 pounds. He's the youngest US-born player in the draft at just 19 and 2 months as it stands, which I think is crucial for a guy who still needs a fair bit of developing but has a lot of tantalizing tools to give. Right now, I think it's easiest to kind of fawn over his physical tools. Like I said, 6'8". His wingspan's somewhere around 7 foot, unconfirmed. He's 225 pounds is pure muscle. He's kind of the perfect build for a modern day four, I think. Especially when you factor in that he has a lot of bounce and the ability to move kind of impressively around the court. In terms of actual skill set, I think he's a little bit more of a project. He's shown the potential to be, you know, a diverse offensive player who can shoot spot ups. He's a very good cutter and can kind of pose as a lob threat or someone who can get easy ones in the dunker's spot. One thing that kind of surprised me when I first watched him and when I've continued to watch him, I'm obviously a big Devin Vassell fan, so I've watched a lot of Pat Williams with Florida State as well, and what surprised me is that he can occasionally run the odd pick and roll, which is definitely not something I think he will be asked to do a lot at the NBA level, but he only logged 26 pick and roll possessions. Synergy had him in the 90th percentile in those situations, which is pretty encouraging. He's got a nice little pull up jumper, and he can pass as well. So I think that's not as much that he'll get to play as a pick and roll player, but I think it's encouraging to see him shoot jumpers off the dribble coming off a screen or playmate for his teammates coming out of the screen, because I think there's still skills that translate to a lot of other parts of the game. Defensively, I think he has real highs and real lows. I wager he'll be a very good shot blocker at the next level, especially once he gets up to speed with the NBA level and the NBA speed. I think he'll be a deterrent at the rim. I think he'll be fairly decent as someone who can play in pick and roll when he doesn't have to kind of hedge out. I think he'll be a very good drop defender in the NBA if he is a four. He's obviously got such great athletic tools, but really, really slow hip movement. A lot like Obi in that sense, I guess, just kind of less pronounced, but he can't really contain guys on the perimeter and in switches or in isolations, really. He was played as a three at times at Florida State, and he was kind of pegged as a three coming out of high school, but I think he's definitely a four just because it'll minimize the amount of times that he has to play up on the perimeter and have to try and contain guys, because once guys get inside his hip, he's pretty much toast. And that's going to be the story for him. I think he can improve it. I think he might be a little heavy. He's a massive guy. For a 19, freshly minted 19-year-old, he's a big dude. I think he could do with losing a little bit of weight. That might make him a little bit more crisp around the perimeter. But all in all, I just think he's a really good prospect. I think he is a bit of a project. He will take some time. I think there's a lot of Timberwolves fans who would like to get him at 17 and just kind of plug him into that power forward role. But I don't think he's NBA starter level from day dot. I mean, he's 12 on my board, so obviously I'm pretty high on him, and I don't think it takes much mental gymnastics to see him realizing a lot of the potential that he has. But for now, I think he's a bit of a project, someone who can do a lot of things, who can shoot the three. He shot, I think, 32%, so not great, but he has an all right shot form. It's a bit slow, but just a diverse kind of offensive player and someone who can finish with power and who can finish with a bit of touch as well, and also flashed a bit of off the dribble stuff. So do you share those kind of same sentiments with Williams?
Yeah, and I like him a lot. I have him at 13 overall on my board. And like you said, he's built, especially for being one of the youngest kids, if not the youngest kid in this draft. I mean, holy cow. And I think he's going to be a very good defender. The closer to the rim he gets, the better he is. And he's an excellent shot blocker at the rim. Really impressive stuff. Just impeccable timing. And his athleticism is obvious. You know, when he gets dragged out onto the perimeter, he's got really slow feet. You know, I have more faith that he'll improve in that area than Obi will, because Obi's hips are so high that he just doesn't even bother trying to get down in a defensive stance. And I think Williams is a little, you know, lower center of gravity, and I think he just kind of needs to loosen up those hips, because it's so easy to just get on the other side of him. He's so slow moving his feet and hips. But he has the athleticism that, you know, kind of suggests that he should improve in that area. And being, you know, barely 18, I have faith that he will. Offensively, I think he's a really good passer too. He's not gonna run an offense, but, you know, passing on that short roll, running the occasional pick and roll, you know, he can create off the dribble, and I think his shot has some work, and I think he was kind of working on, you know, revamping that this season. But when he doesn't have to think about a shot and he just kind of goes with what feels right, he's more successful. You know, when he shot off the dribble, he's in the 70th percentile, and when he shot off the catch, he's in the 54th. So when he tries to line it up and make sure that everything's going the way it should be, you know, he tends to overthink it and leaves it short. Whereas when he's pulling up off the dribble, he's able to elevate over his defender pretty easily and you know, knock it in from the mid-range pretty effortlessly. So that's really encouraging for his future growth, especially with his age. And just overall, he's got a ton of room to grow. I think your point about him being a project is really important. I don't think he'll be one of these guys that's, you know, plug and play from day one.
Yeah.
He's going to be a bit of a project, and, you know, fans will probably get frustrated. It's like, why is our lottery pick not out on the floor 20-plus minutes a game? It's like, well, because he's still a teenager and has a lot of growth to do, and you don't want to kind of shatter what he's working on. So I think if the Wolves got him at 17, I think that'd be a steal.
Yeah.
But fans would also need to temper their expectations, because the odds of him playing right away would probably be pretty low.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, if he lasts till 17, then that'll be, a steal for Minnesota. And I think it'd probably be good for his development if he went a little bit later, just because there'd be less expectations, you know, than if he went at 9, like you said, if your 9th pick in the draft is kind of playing in 18 minutes a game, questions start to be raised about why, and if he's not good enough to play any more, then why was he chosen so high? But at 17, I think the pressure's off him a little bit, especially with Minnesota, because they'll have obviously another pick in the mix, the number one pick or someone they traded that number one pick for. So if he slipped to 17, I think Minnesota would be a really good spot for him. And I think Minnesota have a whole at power forward in general, not just as a starting power forward, but as a backup power forward as well.
Yeah.
And I think he'd be a really good backup power forward on this team, and give him time to kind of learn through his mistakes, but also not, I guess, cost the team wins while doing that by playing 35 minutes a game.
Yeah.
All right. So who's your next guy after Pat Will?
All right. He's the inverse of draft Twitter's Obi Toppin. He is Alexei Pokushevsky, the 7-foot Serbian freak. This dude is a freak of nature. Not athletically, but just when you see him and then see what he does with the ball, you think someone just messed with video editing, and it's like, create a player out there. An incredible wingspan. He's 7 feet tall, 190 pounds, moves like a guard. You know, he can pull up from three. He's a really creative passer and ball handler. You know, when he can run in transition, he can, you know, kick it out of the post, relocate, knock down a step back three. He's going to be really intriguing as a guy. I think he's going to be a much bigger project than some people seem to think. I've seen some people have him as like high as 2 or 3, which I think is absurd. I have him 15 overall. And his length suggests that he should be a pretty good shot blocker, but he's super inconsistent on defense, and he gets blown by all the time. Regularly avoids contact, and then, you know, and he's playing on like the Greek third division, I think it was. So, you know, some of the guys here he was playing against are wider than they are tall. So, you know, just the level of competition, you know, I'm pretty sure it's the same league that Giannis came out of, and, you know, that worked out pretty well, but Giannis wasn't, you know, who he is now. So
And Giannis can't be used as like a baseline. Right. Like he's a freak story that kind of, he's a once in a lifetime story.
Right. Yeah. So like, while I don't think the level of competition should be completely disregarded, I think it does need to be factored in, because some of the stuff that he's doing, you know, he wouldn't get away with in, you know, if he was playing in France even. So, and he's prone to the highlight play, which can result in some really bad turnovers, and maybe that's just a symptom of him being bored playing against these guys who are so far below his league. But, yeah, and I have him at 15, and it's kind of like in that range of, hey, let's take a flyer on this guy because he's super talented and a lot of fun to watch. And if he hits, he could be absolutely incredible because, you know, there are very few people in the league who are like him.
Yeah, that last point is pretty much my mantra with Poku, is just like at some point you have to take a swing on someone like Poku Sepsi. Like at some point you can't keep overlooking the fact that he's like a made in the lab. Like,
right,
he's obviously, like you said, like he's humongous. Like his movement and like hand-eye coordination and vision and stuff is otherworldly for a guy at 7 foot. Like, he's one of them guys, like, when you explain him without watching him, like we are now, if anyone's listening who hasn't watched any of him, you kind of think to yourself, like, why isn't this guy the first overall pick? Like, when you hear that he can pass and shoot off the dribble, like, he can run pick and roll, he, like, can block a shot off the backboard, like catch a shot midair, take the rebound, beat everyone up the court for a layup. Like, he is a nutty prospect, but then he's just got like so many head scratching decisions, like round the back passes when no one's there. The defense is, like you said, just so inconsistent. Like 2.8 blocks and 2 steals per 36 minutes. So obviously he flashed a lot of defensive playmaking for Olympiacos, but he takes a lot of plays off. He loses guys really easily. Like, he's going to get blown by a lot in the NBA, and he's going to probably be a pretty bad team defender, I think, on a play-by-play basis with a lot of crazy blocks or, you know, like jumping a passing lane kind of mixed in with huge lapses on defense. Not strong enough to guard me at the moment, like like he's rail thin, and he's gonna get destroyed if teams try and use him as that unicorn and play him as a five. I think he will get obliterated. Like, I think I think he's more of a three than a five. I think he might even be more of a three than a four. But at 7 foot, like, you kind of just have to play him as a four, like, and He's
right, and if you're throwing him on small forwards, he's going to get toast.
Yeah, but he kind of, he's just an enigma. Like, that's the only way I can describe Poku, is he's just an enigma. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's out of the league in 3 years, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's All-NBA in 3 years. Like, he probably lands somewhere in between that, but, like, that's the range he has. Like, he's the opposite of a safe pick, I think. And
absolutely.
In the late lottery, like, I have him at 13, just below Pat Williams. I don't think you can leave the lottery and leave Poku on the board, especially if you're a team like New Orleans at 11, who kind of have their core set. Like, even like, if he gets to 17 and Minnesota pass on him, I'll be distraught, because Like, he's one of them guys where I just think, like, he'll be fun to watch on your team. And there is, you know, 5-10% chance that he ends up a player we've never seen before.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Yeah, and even if you fell to 16 at Portland, I think Portland would be a ton of fun because they'd have those big men with Zach Collins and Nurkic. They, you know, could kind of cover for him in the paint or defensively.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be fun. Minnesota and...
Him and Towns would be...
it wouldn't be good.
Probably a disaster defensively, but maybe the craziest offense of all time. Like, yeah, those two could come off, like, pin downs on either side of the floor, like, 2 7-footers shooting the, like, his percentages aren't that good per consensus. I don't have them right here, but I think off the top of my head, they were, like, 34% from three or something. But, like, his shot versatility is completely bonkers. Like, he can shoot off the dribble threes from deep behind the line. Like, he can run off pin downs like a guard. Like, having him and Towns on the same floor together offensively would be wild at times. And, like, if you had, like, an offensive mastermind behind it, like, my friend from Prep the Pro podcast and obviously runs a Patreon as well, PD Webb, he spoke about it a bit on the Prep the Pro podcast. Like,
yeah,
if you could get an offensive mind like a D'Antoni or someone like that behind Karl-Anthony Towns and Alexei Pokusevski, like, you should end up having one of the best offenses ever. Like, because
You know, he's 18, so, you know, odds are, even though he's got that super lanky frame, he's going to add some muscle and strength. Yeah. So, you know, just having that length on the interior, you know, hope maybe he improves defensively eventually. You know, that's a lot of length to try and finish over or around at the rim, too. But, yeah, and I just have his shooting numbers. What I'm seeing is 40% from the field, 78% from the line, and 32% on 4.5 attempts from three.
Yeah, so it doesn't inspire much confidence, especially considering, like we said, like, he plays in the Greek second or third division. So, like, I think it's probably a good chance he shoots, like, 35% from the field and maybe, like...
Yeah.
But, like, it's looking into the future with Poku, even more so than Patrick Williams, I think, just because I'm pretty sure his numbers are going to be bad in his first year. But he can also do things that I've never seen guys his height do.
So, yeah, and it's a lot of Bol Bol vibes.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. That is a good comparison. Obviously, with a little bit less height, I think, than Bol Bol. Right. But, like, the length, you know, and the crazy kind of shooting, like, it's so hard to project where he'll go. But I think in the late lottery, it's just a good pick because if he doesn't work out, like, how many late lottery guys don't work out a ton?
Right. You're not expected to at that point, really.
Yeah. Like, and if he hits, it's an absolute steal. It is Giannis, like, if he hits just because, you know, it's one of them guys. Like, you just take a swing on him, and if you hit a home run, then, you know, you're happy. And if you don't, well, then you kind of didn't waste a really high pick. Like, the guys who are really high on him, I think if you're a GM and you're taking him in the top five,
you're going to get fired.
You're going to get fired for it, yeah. Like, unless he hits on his 90th percentile outcome, which he probably won't for 5 years anyway. Like, you're out the door. Right.
Exactly.
So I'm guessing our last guy Oh, no, you... So who was your last guy?
My last guy is Precious.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll go with Precious first. I don't have Precious on my list. He's a very close sixth. He's still in my top 20 as well, but outside of my top five power forwards. But he's a guy I'm writing about as we speak, so I'm really interested to see your thoughts on him.
Yeah, I'm excited to read what your kind of deep dive has on him. You know, I wrote like 2 weeks ago on him and Paul Reed over at Can of Soups. Go check it out. The more I watch Precious, you know, he works his ass off. You know, he's another one of these guys who just has an incredible nonstop motor, and he's a freak athlete, you know, to pair with it. And at 6'9", 225, the dude is built. He can move, you know, really strong rebounder, great athlete, can run in transition with ease. He's very rough around the edges. You know, his ball handling needs to tighten up. His outside shooting needs to be improved pretty drastically. I don't think he'll ever be a, you know, quote unquote good 3-point shooter. But if he can be competent from the corner, I think that would be massive. And I love his defensive potential. His size, his athleticism, his work rate, his shot blocking is really impressive, and just his eagerness to grab and go, I think adds kind of a new dimension to, you know, turning defense into offense. That, you know, something that the Wolves don't have right now, and something that Ryan Saunders in their little mini bubble, you know, talked about that they wanted to do more with, you know, their kind of more of a grab and go mentality. And he would definitely help with that. I think next to Towns, he would help defensively. You know, he's still pretty raw and needs some coaching on the defensive end. But, you know, when he's locked in, it's pretty impressive. And, you know, he'll definitely make a positive impact. And then, you know, he can even play that small ball five if they want to kind of spread the floor out and just kind of have him be that screen man and open up the lane for either a hard roll for him or drives or cuts. So, and he's very raw, but just I love his size and motor.
Yeah. I completely agree. I mean, the first thing that I wrote down in my notes when I was just watching Memphis was that the Precious is kind of like a thunderstorm. Like at times he's beautiful and he's great to watch, but he's also like destructive, and you're just not sure, you know, like how bad or how good he's going to be at any given time. Like I share your sentiments that he's just a very impressive athlete. Like 6'9", he's strong as an ox. Like he's a big dude. I know we've kind of gone like back and forth this whole podcast on like skinny dudes and massive dudes, but but Precious is like the biggest of the lot. Like he stood out on a court that had James Wiseman on it.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, one of the better compliments you can get in terms of physical tools. And then obviously he's super quick, like as quick as any 6'9" dude, 225 pound, you know, player should be getting up the court in transition. Like you said, taking the board and running is probably the thing that impresses me the most about him, and something that I think will translate immediately. He needs to be a better ball handler so that he can get all the way to the ring, and he just needs to stay under control a lot more. Like he's very prone to getting his footwork all messed up or kind of tripping over a little bit or just getting a little bit of tunnel vision going towards the rim and making the mistake. He kind of reminds me of like a Josh Okogie at times when Okogie's going towards the rim and it just kind of all unravels pretty quickly for him. But then at other times when it works, it looks really good because the athleticism's there. And the power is there. He is a great rebounder. I love his nose for the ball as a rebounder. Like you said, needs to become a better shooter. Not sure he ever will, but
yeah,
there's a baseline there that's not completely non-shooter level. Like if he could get to 33% on a couple attempts a game, you know, that at least opens up a few more avenues for him to score offensively, because I do think he'll be fairly offensively challenged, especially early on in his career. He'll get putbacks. He'll probably get, you know, dump offs in the dunker spot and stuff like that. But I'm not sure he'll ever be able to kind of. I'm pretty positive he's not going to be able to create his own shot. He's a guy who needs the ball given to him to do something. But the energy is infectious. Like the way he plays is infectious. It's something that I do think Minnesota will take a long look at Precious, especially if he's there at 17. Because that's something this team does need. Like, they need someone who can come in and kind of, you know, throw caution to the wind defensively. He great defensive instincts, great defensive playmaker. Not as pronounced as Poku, but, like, on a possession-to-possession basis, I do think he's not excellent. Like, he definitely has lapses in judgment and times where I think he's a bit over-eager to hit, make the home run play rather than just being solid. But in general, I think he'll be a really good defensive player. I think he's one of them players where if he goes into an open workout and hits, you know, 60 out of 100 threes, he might get taken at like 10 or something. Like, because his body type is very valuable in today's NBA. And like you said, like, easily could be a small ball five with his size. I'm a Precious fan. I don't have him on my list. He was the next guy I would have had. But I think Precious is a whirlwind. I don't know what else to say about him. He's just a whirlwind to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so we'll get into my last guy quickly, then we'll do our sleepers. My last guy is Sadiq Bey. We didn't mention him on the small forward podcast because we both kind of agreed that he's more of a four at the next level. Six foot eight, 215 pounds, 6'11" wingspan. I've got him at 18 on my board, maybe, or 17. Flip flopped a couple of times on him back and forth. Right now, I'm on the higher side of Bay. I'm not a big believer in his ability to be a 3-and-D small forward prospect like he's kind of billed by a lot of, you know, sources, mainly because I'm pretty iffy about his perimeter defense. I don't think he'll be able to stay in front of wings who can handle the ball really well. I think he's more suited to a power forward role, and I think he has enough strength to kind of thrive as a small ball four in the modern game. I think his passing is one thing that stands out for me outside of the obvious shooting, is that he's a really good passer, I think. Not a playmaker or a initiator by any stretch, but someone who really makes the right read. And Villanova's offense has always been very good and kind of produces players who play the game the right way and who play to win. So that's a tick for me, obviously, but the key skill for Bay is his shooting. 86th percentile as a spot-up guy, 79th percentile coming off screens, 88th percentile in handoff action, 45% from three overall on 5.6 attempts per game. For me, it's a bankable skill, and as a guy who has genuine size to play as a four or even a three in some scenarios, I think it's pretty valuable to be a high 30s, maybe low 40s 3-point shooter on decent volume. So I'm pretty low on his self creation as a scorer, and I think he won't get, you know, the post ups and stuff that Villanova run. He won't get any of those at the next level, but. He does finish well around the rim when he does get there. I don't think he'll get there a lot at the NBA, but he's the kind of guy I think can just play solid defense at the four, hit threes at a really good rate, and pass a little bit and make a few plays for others and kind of get his own shot in the mid range here and there. So I just think he's a pretty safe pick at, you know, late lottery or, you know, 15 to 20 range. He's a pretty safe pick for me.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have him 19 overall. I love his off ball shooting, and the numbers speak for themselves. I think he's a little more dynamic with the ball in his hands. I think he's pretty good at getting to the rim. I think he can run the pick and roll pretty effortlessly. He's a quality passer. You know, everyone who comes out of Villanova tends to be. I don't love his shot off the dribble. You know, some of that's shot selection where he kind of gets blinders on and only looks for his own shots at times, which, you know, I don't expect that to carry over because his role won't dictate that. And if it does, yeah, he'll sit his ass on the bench. I think he's an okay defender. I don't think he, I mean, he's not bad, but I think he was a huge beneficiary of Villanova's just really strong team defense.
I think he's really not good at getting through screens as a pick and roll defender, yeah, and like that's why I think that he can't really guard threes consistently.
Yeah, and he's not going to be that lockdown, you know, versatile defender. And his body type and athleticism will allow him to kind of switch on multiple guys. And he's a strong guy, so he can defend in the post. But he's not going to be your, you know, defensive linchpin. He'll get beat on drives and stuff. So I think he's a good defender. I don't think he's as great as, you know, some people are hyping him up as. Just overall, he's just a solid player who's smart, and I anticipate will know his role and will just kind of contribute to a rotation pretty well for, you know, a couple of contracts.
Yeah, I completely agree. And at that, you know, that 15 to 20 range, if you can get a guy who gets 10 years in the NBA, I think you've done pretty well.
Oh, yeah, that's a major win.
Yeah. So who is your first sleeper, or your only sleeper?
Okay, so my first sleeper, guy who would probably be have a lottery grade for me if he wasn't hurt every other month, Killian Tilly. I have him at 44 overall, so kind of mid-second round. You know, if he would have shown any sort of consistent health, you know, he would have been top 15 for me. And he can space the floor. He's an excellent passer, good rebounder. You know, not a good defender, but big enough where he can kind of, you know, control the interior.
Defensively, he kind of reminds me of like a Nikola Jokic, where he kind of,
yeah,
he's big and he's lumbering and he's slow, but he's also very smart and very good, yeah, with his hands. So he kind of stops himself from being like the worst defender on the court, whereas he's just not a good defender, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I kind of get some like Boris Diaw vibes out of him, yeah, too. He's 6'10", 220, so he's a big dude.
And he looks bigger than 220.
Yeah. He's a really versatile scorer. You know, he can, when he gets the ball at the top of the key and is allowed to face up, you know, Gonzaga, I think, scored essentially nearly every time when he got that, because he was able to knock down a three, find cutters, find guys spotting up. You know, he's a really, really good passer. The guy's just never been healthy in his life. And if he's there in the second round, I'd absolutely take a flyer on him. But to spend a first round pick on him, for a guy who's never proven that he can stay on the floor, would be pretty tough to convince me to do.
Yeah. I love Killian Tilly. I have him 29, yeah, on my board, so just inside that first round, just because, similar to what I said with Poku, like at some point you just have to take a flyer on him in this draft, like when there's not that many kind of superstar prospects, or even I think there is good depth in this draft, but like you said, Tilly with full bill of health is a surefire lottery pick. He probably is drafted 2 years ago. Like I think the only reason why he stayed in Gonzaga was just because he couldn't stay healthy, and I don't think GMs could promise him a first round pick, or, you know, even promise him to be picked at any stage, just because it's hard with a guy that big and a host of foot and leg and knee injuries. I think he's had 5 or 6 or 7 maybe since he started, since he began college. Like, but yeah, he's an awesome player. Like, yeah, he can shoot. He's a great shooter. Like, for a big man, he's got a clean release. He'll be a healthy Tilly is a pick and pop menace. Like, He great high-low pass. They run a lot of high-low action in yep. Gonzaga, and he just crushed it when he was the high passer in the high-low play. And yeah, he's just a fun player to watch. He could be a massive steal if he's just one of those guys that just ends up staying healthy with, you know, better medical professionals and stuff around him. But I think it's pretty fair to expect that won't be him, just because it's not, they haven't been freak accidents. You know, they've been like muscle injuries and ligament injuries, like stuff that's really concerning when you're not even in the most physical league in the NBA yet. Like, so it's concerning. It's annoying that he's injured because he's just such a good player.
Sucks.
And he's such a good player. Like, I think he might even be one of them guys where like maybe next year everyone will be like, wow, like why didn't people draft Killian Tilly? But then in 3 years they'll be like, yeah,
well, I hope so.
That's why they didn't, because he lasted 2 years and he was really good for those 2 years, and then he was out of the league. But I'm a huge Tilly fan. I'd take him at 30. I'd take him at 33 without a second thought. Because
I think I would too.
Like at especially if they've used both of their picks. Like if they don't end up trading down or trading out on draft night, like you may as well just throw caution to the wind and take Tilly. Like, he's better than Naz Reid. I love Naz Reid, but like a healthy Tilly is definitely better than Naz Reid.
100%.
He does everything that Reid does, just way better. And then you can, you know, if he doesn't work out and he gets injured, like, it's not a huge mistake. Like, you picked him at 33. You've got Reid there, who can adequately play as a backup center as well. So, I think if you're looking at sleepers, if you're looking at a guy who will go a lot lower than his talent level, Tilly's that guy.
Yeah.
All right, so my sleeper is Reggie Perry, Mississippi State.
Love it.
6'9", 250 pounds, which I didn't know he was that big. Like,
yeah,
he looked big, obviously, but like 250 is massive. Like, 7 foot wingspan. He's probably more of a center than a power forward, but there wasn't that many power forward sleepers that I really liked. So I thought I'd just kind of throw him in here because I think he might be able to play a little bit of both. He's just a really fun guy to watch. Someone I think who'll carve out a nice little role in the NBA at some point. He averaged 17, 10, 2 assists, 1.2 blocks at Mississippi State. Really was the guy who consistently stood out to me when I went to watch Robert Woodard. It was Perry that kind of jumped off the screen, and he's only 20. He's a sophomore. He's only 20. He's good in the post, can hit the hook with either hand. He has some nice little baseline kind of fall away jumpers as well. He's going to work tirelessly to clean up misses on both offensive and defensive glass. He's a good hard roller who will just get buckets based on his ability to hammer guards with a tough screen and then pivot out of it and get to the rim. Like, he's you can feel his screens for the next few days, I'd say. He ranked in the 67th percentile in catch and shoot situations and in the 85th percentile in spot ups. So I think there's real potential for him to improve on the 32% that he shot in college on about two three pointers attempts a game. So I think the bad things for him, or the things that kind of have him slipping to like mid 40s and 50s on draft boards, is that he's quite sloppy with his decision making. I think both offensively and defensively, his shot selection is not great. I think he needs to work on his defensive awareness and rotations. He doesn't really have a single skill that pops, and I think that might be the main reason why he has slid down mock drafts and slid down boards. It's just because he's kind of a jack of all trades, master of none, and as a big guy who isn't guaranteed to shoot from three well, I think not being a great defender or a good 3-point shooter, kind of, it's tough for a big man these days. It's that one of those skills you seem to need to be able to do fairly well. And I'm not sure he will do either fairly well, but he's still a guy that I've watched, and I just think, like, this guy shouldn't be going in the 50s. Like, he's good, man. He's good at basketball, and I think he'll be a backup five for a fairly long time.
Yeah, so I currently have him at 57. He's probably been one of, if not the biggest movers for me. And early in the season, I had him as like high as 20. I was super high on him. Love his playmaking. Love his rebounding. Love his, you know, stretch potential and interior scoring. Just the more I watched him, though, the more, you know, I just noticed that he took himself out of games by just getting frustrated. You know, when the second things start going against him, he gets visibly frustrated, takes himself out of games, and then his decision making just plummets. He'll just throw the ball out of bounds. He'll completely miss a rotation. You know, he'll stay tight on his guy instead of dropping or switching in the pick and roll, which are all things that he's super capable of doing and does when, you know, things are clicking and they're playing well and he looks awesome. But then, you know, he has a couple turnovers, has an offensive foul or two go against him, and he just immediately takes himself out of the game. So, you know, early in the season, I was like, holy shit, this is like the next Bam Adebayo. And, you know, he has that skill set. He's this big man who can initiate the offense and run in transition and dominate the boards. And it's like, oh, Bam, or he doesn't have any of the mental makeup that Bam does.
Yeah. Which is super important for players like that.
Yeah. So, while I think his skill set is similar, and he's a better shooter, just he doesn't have that confidence or that competitiveness. You know, maybe it's just a situation where he hated Mississippi State and just wanted to get the hell out of there, and was sick of his teammates or hated his coach or something like that, you know? But the skill level is there in my mind, where he should be probably a first-round talent based solely on his skill level. And, you know, 57 is probably way too low to have him. I should probably move him up. But just seeing, you know, a month stretch of games where he just routinely took himself out of games and just got demonstrably frustrated just really kind of soured my taste on him.
Yeah, and that's something that when you're already a guy who's, you know, projected second round pick, like,
yeah,
that's something that GMs see, and that is something that could end up seeing you go undrafted, like, if you can't keep your head in a game and really focus, because as we've seen with Minnesota with guys like Wiggins and even Towns at times, like, they're guys who are elite talents, and their mental makeup has let them down. In Andrew Wiggins' case, severely let him down. Like,
so frustrating.
So for a guy who's not even close to that talent level, for their mental makeup to kind of not be where it needs to be, that's definitely worrying, I think.
Yeah, so, and if we could find a way to kind of merge Perry and Precious, I think that'd be awesome. Yeah. I think we're good to go. I'm sure that science is right on the verge of that breakthrough.
I'm sure, like, Gerson Rosas is, like, developing that in his office somewhere. All right, so who was your list overall? Who was your 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6?
All right, so I got Denny, Obi, Patrick Williams. I the more I think about it, I'll probably end up switching those. And then Alexei Pokuševski, Precious Achiuwa, and then Killian Tilly.
Yeah, so, and mine was Denny, Pat Williams, Poku, Sadiq Bey, Obi Toppin, and then Reggie Perry. And if we're looking at it through a Timberwolves lens, who would you take in order?
I would go Denny.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I know. That's a shocker. I know. I feel like I came out of left field with that one. I go Denny, Pat Will, Precious, probably Sadiq Bey, Killian Tilly, Reggie Perry, Obi.
I found this hard. Like, I think Denny's number one, and I'm not completely, like, steadfast in that, but I think he'd be the first guy I took out of that list. Then I think Pat Williams, Poku, Sadiq Bey, Toppin and then Reggie Perry. I think I'd probably take Toppin just because there is some nuclear upside, I guess, with his offense. But Opoku and Pat Williams is the one that gave me pause. Like, there is part of me that thinks Opoku is a top 10 player in the draft, and I think with Minnesota, like I explained before, like I think the offense could be crazy good, and the defense probably doesn't get that much worse than it already is. Yeah. Like he's, I think he's a better defender than like Juan Johan Gomez, for example. So, I'd love Poku.
The more I think about it, he's fun.
The more I think about it, the more I just think like he's fun.
You're
like,
gonna talk yourself into him.
Yeah, and like, Minnesota basketball has been not fun for a long time. No. So, like, Poku would just be fun to watch. So
true. We absolutely need some fun in our lives.
Yeah, and I don't know how many more games they win, but, like, they don't ever win games, so.
Yeah. So nothing really changes.
Yeah. Well, leave it at that. I think that was another really good episode. I'm happy that you got to come in and I get to hear your full thoughts on Denny, because I know how much you like him, and I really like listening to both sides. Like you said, with like Dane Moore and stuff, like he obviously wasn't high on Denny. Some people aren't high on him. Some people are really high on him, like you. And I think it's really valuable to get both sides of the story. We'll leave it at that. Everyone listening, thanks for listening. Like, rate, subscribe, comment, like rating in the iTunes does a lot for the growth of the podcast. So if you are listening to this on iTunes, just leave a 5-star rating down the bottom, or you know, a 1-star rating if you hate me, whatever. Thanks for listening. Thanks as usual, Tyler, you're the best, man.
My pleasure, Jake.